Your financial questions answered by the best local business professionals. Only here on the Money Matters Radio Network. Call in with your questions at 888-205-2263 or send us instant feedback on moneymattersboston.com.
Welcome into Wednesday afternoon edition Money Matters Radio. June Knight, your host, till 4 o'clock, along with Brendan King, who steps in at the 3 o'clock hour with me, my co-host. He is from Estate Preservation Law Offices in Worcester, Massachusetts. And it's something to, 68, 69 degrees on this Wednesday. Brendan, welcome in.
Thank you for having me again. It's pretty balmy out there.
Is it still balmy?
I was running around. I was kind of a car warrior today. Just, I wasn't really in the office, just going from thing to thing.
Yeah.
And walking around with different boxes and stuff. A lot of physical activity for me, being the physical, muscular guy I am,
yeah,
as you can see. and I was just breaking out in a sweat. It was very summer-like out there today, I'd say.
Yeah, the problem is...
without the sun.
Well, without the sun.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but about a week or two ago, I went and put away all those clothes.
Right. I hear you. Yeah.
Left out maybe a couple of short sleeve t-shirts and things like
that.
Now,
I've got to ask you, as a stylish woman that you are, when you put away clothes like that, are you thinking you're going to see them again, or is there like a whole new wardrobe that comes in for the next season? Because the guys, I think, are a little bit less concerned. I mean, we're wearing things year-round, right straight through and year after year. But
I put, the real summer stuff, I put it away.
Yeah.
Maybe 90% of it, definitely put it away and not see it again for 6 months. But that's also a good time to go through stuff and clean it out.
Right.
And maybe I won't wear this ever again. And maybe
the acid
wash goes
away.
Yeah. Hey, don't laugh. That stuff's coming back in.
It's frightening.
I've seen some acid wash straight leg peg jeans out there.
You know what I was kind of shocked about is that I've seen, and I don't even know if you're wearing them today, but those flat shoes,
the ballerina shoes almost.
Yeah, they're like those.
Remember
flat
those?
Shoes. I remember like the 80s,
yes.
And I remember my mom kind of carried those through, and now they're like coming back. So I'm thinking these people are stylish for holding on so long.
Yeah, if you've held on to anything like that, the wide belts that go over the big bulky sweaters. did you wear the Paisley Bill Cosby sweater from the 80s? Did you wear that back then?
Of course I did.
Did you still have any of those?
I'm sure that I do. My wife is a great weeder, though.
Uh-huh.
She is a great weeder. And I think, most significant others, I shouldn't say that. I should say that wives and girlfriends, because I think that their job is to make sure I go out the door, or any man goes out the door, not looking like an idiot.
Right, not looking like a clown.
Yeah, right, and that's their job.
Embarrass
the
family.
I really think that's a huge part of it. Like, and I do. I run the check to my wife. Honey, how do I look? Do I look okay?
Uh-huh.
And she does. The couple things she'll do is she'll make sure the tie is not too high, so I'm not doing the Dilbert curve up. or it's not, I've got the back, for me as a tall guy, sometimes the back untucks, if I'm sitting down or whatever.
Oh, sure, because you have a long torso.
Yeah, a long torso problem. So, there's a few things that have to be looked over. But for the most part, I think I can put it together an outfit pretty well.
Funny you say, Brendan, talking about recycling clothes and hanging on to things, because clothes are very expensive. And this is Money Matters Radio Network. And, hopefully you don't have to get rid of a lot of different clothing when the seasons change. But we are into fall. And fall means one thing if you're a senior in high school.
That's right.
And that is you're thinking about going to college.
That's right. The big C word, college or university, I guess.
Yes.
But, I thought what we would talk about today, and that's a great lead in, is going to school. Well, how does that affect, when you're talking about estate planning, which is, I think, what the show is generally about, and we've been going through different topics every week, an often overlooked topic is financial aid. And when you're thinking about planning your estate, people oftentimes will say to me, why are there questions on your intake sheet about financial aid or people in college? Or grandsons in college. It's, the reason I want to know that is because if some of the things you're thinking about that you want to accomplish is about maybe moving assets, we always talk about the ripple effect of what we do. We move something. And one of the ripples that can occur is that you could affect someone else's financial aid. And perfect example, classic example we see all the time in practices, we'll sit there and a client will come in and say, I moved my house. Maybe grandma comes in. I moved my house to my daughter's name. And inevitably, you'll find out that the daughter had a son at a full ride at Dartmouth or whatever. Now, what ends up happening there is that asset now becomes part of the financial aid questions that are asked with respect to that family. Okay, and we'll get into that. We'll break it down a little bit, you know, more clearly than that. But generally speaking, 30,000 foot view, the intro to what we'd be talking about is, hey, listen, you move this. Now when they are filling out their FAFSA form, that becomes an asset in calculating their expected family contribution.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we'll kind of see how that plays out. So again, it's not so much I want to know this as it pertains to my clients specifically, but part of my job is to not adversely affect their family, because part of my job is to make sure that I have a happy client and to accomplish the goals. And sometimes we look at families bigger than the immediate family, but you know, you don't want to adversely affect a child, because you know, that's not the goal of your client, or my client as well. My client's goal is to protect their assets, but again, not adversely affect anyone else. That Rubik's Cube model we're always talking about, got to do all the sides, and that's what we're going to be talking about today.
Okay, so basically, I guess, Brendan, what you're saying then is there's ways to move assets around, spread them out or move them around legally, that is.
Sure, yeah.
So that your chances of qualifying for financial aid, for college financial aid, are a lot better.
That's right. And I think the point of today's session is to say, okay, this is how it's calculated. Okay, so just be aware, just to give people a flavoring, because I think there's a lot of misunderstanding as to what's calculated and how it's calculated, or at least just a lack of people out there who talk about it. A lot of times people go to financial aid seminars and they'll realize that it's nothing more than, hey, how do I qualify for loans, and when should I submit my FAFSA? But they're not telling them the real good stuff as to, you know, how much are my assets calculated? When are they calculated? When should I be thinking about when is my income? You know, I'm earning a lot this year. Didn't earn much last year. What year is going to be looked at? So things like that. I think that's real important. But at the, you know, once you understand that, you can kind of see how it will back into what we're talking about in estate planning. That is, if your estate planning advisor knows some of the rules or how things are calculated, or at least considers the financial aid aspect of the family, then maybe that will be contemplated when they're taking their intake on you, the client, and that if you do have a grandson who is possibly on a financial aid scholarship or getting financial aid based on need, then we can, you know, avoid a situation where they could be knocked off altogether, because, you know, a house at 5.65% calculated on the EFC, and we'll get into that again, that's going to do a lot of damage to that child's ability to qualify for aid based on need. So, you know, I think that's really what we'll jump into. And then, you know, really with respect to financial aid, there's really a couple different kinds that you want to be concerned about. I mean, certainly you have the merit-based aid. You have the, hey, I can kick a football 65 yards, you know, I'm the smartest kid that ever walked through the doors of my high school. You know, that's merit-based. But I think what we're really concerned about here, and what most, when someone says scholarships or need, what we're talking about is financial need. Okay, so what we're going to be talking about today is how your assets, your income is, you know, goes to calculating that need. So that's financial aid in itself. What it is altogether from 30,000 feet up, taking all the language and EFC and acronyms away, you're looking at three things. You're looking at cost of attendance, you're looking at expected family contribution, and you're looking at need. So really those three things. Okay, so when we're talking about that, it's really need is cost of attendance minus expected family contribution. Mm-hmm. That equals need. And this is actually one of those things where a board would help. So maybe radio isn't the greatest, you know, teaching here, but that's really what it is. At the end of the day, it's cost of attendance minus expected family contribution is need. So the first question is, well, what is cost of attendance? You know, what is it, Brendan? You know, is it the same for everybody? No, it's really, what does the school cost? Tuition, room and board, transportation costs, books. It can be different for every individual, even at the same school. So, you know, you can go online and find out, you know, what BU's cost of attendance is, BC, you know, local schools, Wellesleyan, Holy Cross, throw Holy Cross on there, my alma mater. So you can find out what those, the cost of attendance is for a school. That, so that's pretty easy. What's not so easy and where some of the play comes in is the next factors. Cost of attendance, remember, minus expected family contribution. Now, your expected family contribution is calculated based on what you fill out on the FAFSA form. So the FAFSA form is going to give us our expected family contribution for what we call the federal methodology method of calculating financial aid. There's really a couple. There's the federal methodology and what we call the institutional methodology in calculating financial aid. The institutional methodology is used for getting the expected family contribution with respect to some of the private institutions for their own assets. The federal methodology is for the federal money that's given to schools that schools are allowed to allocate for financial aid. So that you can actually have two EFCs, and what's real important is to know what school you're applying to as to whether they're a federal methodology. Of course they are, but are they also are you going to have to do a CSS profile form, which will give us our institutional methodology?
Okay.
So we'll come back with that.
Let's do it. Let's take a break. You're listening to the Money Matters Radio Network.
Over the last 2 years, we have lived through some very dramatic economic times. If this has left you wondering and worrying about your retirement, you're not alone. I'm Eric Spent, financial advisor at Strategic Financial Partners. My team has over 30 years of experience helping people address a full range of financial issues, including how to make your money last throughout retirement. For a free consultation or an invitation to one of our client workshops, please call me at 781-788-4671. Don't waste another minute worrying about your financial future. Call Eric Spent at 781-788-4671.
Eric Spint is a registered representative of New England Securities. Securities and investment advisory services offered by NES, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC, and a registered investment advisor. Branch office 800 South Street, Suite 505, Waltham, Mass., 02453. Strategic Financial Partners is a separate entity of NES. Log on to MoneyMattersBoston.com to find a Money Matters Radio Network affiliate near you.
Who's ready to hear some fun facts about Geico? All right, let's give it a go, shall we? First, over 3 million drivers switched to Geico last year. Second, Geico received a customer satisfaction rate of 97%. Third, Geico's been providing car insurance for over 70 years.
Whoa, hold up a tick. These aren't fun facts at all. These are financially sound facts. We've been duped.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you hundreds on car insurance.
Do you have questions or need help with your current or pending mortgage? Rob Gallagher of Ross Mortgage in Westboro has over 30 years of experience in the retail mortgage industry. Rob and the team at Ross Mortgage have proficient loan officers, processors, and underwriters waiting to assist you. Ross Mortgage is driven by excellence, respect, ethics, and teamwork. Contact Rob at Ross Mortgage by calling 877-811-5508 or visit them at rossmortgageco.com.
Hi, this is Rob Mitchell, your Monday and Thursday co-host of Money Matters. I'm the president of Coastal Finance, and I question, is it painful for you to draw down from your retirement funds every month in the current market conditions? Are you now afraid you will outlive your savings? If you're 62 years or older and a homeowner, a tax-free reverse mortgage can be a smart and safe way to protect your hard-earned nest egg. Call Coastal Finance at 888-974-6262. That's 888-974-6262. Or visit us at CoastalReverse.com. Coastal Finance, the key to unlocking the wealth in your home.
Mass license number MC5160, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Keeping an eye on your wallet is what we do best, right here on the Money Matters Radio Network. Send the Money Matters team instant feedback at MoneyMattersBoston.com or call in with your questions at 888-205-2263.
Rich girl, and you're gone too far, 'cause you know it don't matter anyway.
You're back into the Money Matters Radio Network. How you doing on this Wednesday at 3:17 June night? Your host until 4 o'clock along with my co-host, Brendan King of Estate Preservation Law Offices out of Worcester, Massachusetts. Okay, so before the break, Brendan, you were telling us about calculating financial aid and how all that works.
That's right, and where we had left off was how is getting that expected family contribution number, that what we call the EFC, if you will. We talked about cost of attendance and what that is. And from cost of attendance, we subtract this thing called EFC. And right before the break, I had mentioned that you can have a couple different EFCs, and depending on where you end up going. You know, if you end up going to a school that just uses the federal methodology, and you can find this out by looking online, you know, getting online and looking up the CSS profile list of schools that require the other form, because you will end up having two expected family contribution numbers. And the idea of the expected family contribution, that's based on four things. It's based on parents' assets, parents' income, students' assets, and students' income. So really what ends up happening there is that you do a calculation, and I'm going to run through this again. It would be better on a board than said. But really what ends up happening is you do this calculation. At the end of the day, you're going to have a number. But there's two different ways that that's going to end up being calculated. So if you end up going to a school, again, like Holy Cross, that uses the institutional type method, you'll have an EFC that is different from a school that, like Assumption College, using two Worcester schools, that uses a federal methodology calculation. So, you know, without further ado, I'm going to run through that calculation just so people have an idea of what goes into it, because I think that there's some mystery to the whole financial aid and how it's calculated. But generally speaking, with respect to students' income, okay, so if you have those four things I talked about, and if you were to write those out on paper, and you start with student income of the four things that you're going to be looking at, you take students' income and you subtract a student income allowance, and that fluctuates from year to year. So roughly that's going to be about, they give you like $4,500, almost $5,000 of allowance on the student's income. So they get that free. That's not going to be calculated towards that.
Okay.
What then happens is that then you take the rest of a student's income and you multiply that by 50%. Okay. Mm-hmm. So 50 cents on the dollar will then shoot over to what's going to be added to this, the expected family contribution of the family. So you say to yourself, it's almost like a disincentive for students to work. And ironically, it is from this perspective. I mean, obviously, you want students to work for a lot of other reasons.
Sure.
But, you know, for financial aid, it's taxed pretty high. And I use that word taxed in this instance. But it's taxed pretty high. 50 cents on the dollar after that allowance is going to shoot towards the family EFC, shoot to the number of which you're taking away from the cost of attendance. So that's the first thing. You're going to add that to the next calculation we're going to be doing, which is the student's assets. So the student's assets does not have any allowance. So every dollar that a student has, 20% of that is taxed, if you will, towards the calculation to be added towards the expected family contribution number for the family.
Okay.
So we had the roughly $5,000 or so that the student can keep on income multiplied by 50%. The assets, that final number will be added to the assets that are calculated. So if a child has $100, $20 of that is going to shoot over to the expected family contribution. So now, again, you say, wow, that's a lot of, you know, percent. It's a very high percentage of tax, if you will, to that number. And the answer is yes. Well, you know, now you're beginning to realize that maybe it's not such a great idea for financial aid purposes to have a ton of money in the student's name. Again, almost a disincentive.
So
it's everything you've always learned, like
yeah.
You work hard and stuff. Yeah, it doesn't work that well for financial aid calculations.
Okay, so if your kid, you know, your child goes out and gets a summer job or
right.
gets part-time job, whatever, and then you're saying if they put it aside in a savings account or something, this is not a good idea.
For financial aid, it's not.
So what do they do? Maybe they can put it in another account?
Well,
or?
You know, and that's a good question, because we're going to talk about the difference between holding it in a student's name versus a parent.
Okay.
Because then what ends up happening is, we'll get to that, but the next thing is the parent's income. Okay, so the parent's income is going to be taxed based on the parents will get a little living allowance to have, because, you know, depending on how many kids you have in the family, the age of the parent, you know, you can't take, you know, an older parent's going to be allowed to keep more of their income to support themselves, and if you have kids. So you get a living allowance that's dependent on a few different things. But then, depending on how much the parent makes, it's anywhere from 22% to 47% after that living allowance is caught towards the EFC. But the parental assets is the final thing, and this is what you were asking, June.
Mm-hmm.
5.65% is the tax percentage, if you will, versus the students at 20. So to that, if you're thinking about keeping it in the student's name versus the parent's name, right there, you should say, well, 20% versus 5.65. It makes a heck of a lot more sense to keep it in the parent's name, because less of that asset is going to shoot to the EFC number. So given the choice between the parents and the student's assets. So it's helpful to understand this, because when we're thinking about moving things around, again, when you're looking at all these different when you're looking at all the things you have to think about, gift taxes, income tax, and you're thinking about, okay, let's throw financial aid in the mix. Now we've got to consider like the financial aid aspect of what we're talking about, what we're doing.
Sure.
Now notice none of this calculates grandma's assets. Okay, so again, when we're starting to talk about when we move assets, how we move assets, and when's the best time to do it, you got to kind of throw in the financial aid piece, because if you do have a child or grandchild, if you will, that may be applying, throwing your asset that you may be trying to protect from the nursing home into your child's name or into the child's family who may have a child themselves at school. You know, moving that asset is now going to, you can see how it affects.
Now
going to
affect your grandchild's financial aid.
Right.
Oh my goodness.
Right.
So we're moving the stuff all over the place, and it's
right.
No good.
Right.
It,
right.
You know, granny's not not getting into the nursing home, and
yeah.
Your kid's not getting into college. What do? Give it to the dog?
Well, you know, that's what ends up happening is not that you necessarily give it to the dog. And we can talk about, have a pet law. And we did talk about that at one point in the show. But I think, you know, again, it's not so much, you know, what do you do? It's more about, okay, now that we understand that, I'm a big fan of knowing the rules of the game. And we talked about this, I think, last week when we were talking about, my kids playing Monopoly or whatever it was. It's like, you know, even kids want to know the rules. Okay, because once you know the rules, you can plan. I think planning is all about knowing the rules, because no matter what the rules are, whether they're nursing home rules or financial aid rules or tax rules or whatever, we can plan. What makes it very difficult, and I think that's particularly frustrating, and I just came from a seminar where I was talking about this. I was giving a seminar for a company, and they were asking me about the taxes, and that's particularly frustrating on the federal level when you don't have rules and you don't know how to plan, because you can't plan with no rules.
Right.
You can make your best guess. But, you know, again, you're just guessing. And for all of you out there who think, I don't know. And my clients always, you know, take me aside and say, hey, so what's really going to happen? You can tell me. I'm your friend. I don't know. IRS doesn't know. You know, they even have it on their frequently asked questions on their website. Nobody knows what's going to happen. But again, knowing the rules of financial aid is very beneficial for an estate planner, because estate planners, again, our job is to protect the wealth of the family. And if you are moving things for one reason, you better have an idea as to how it's going to affect something else, so that at least if it's going to affect something else, you can tell your client that, because a happy client is a prepared client. What the client's not happy about is when you move an asset and then they come back and their daughter's coming back to you saying, hey, guess what? We get no aid this year. Who's going to pay that bill?
Have you seen that happen?
Because I'll get a lot of people who come to see me on the financial, because I know the rules, and will come to see me maybe after, because this may have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, listen, I got a lot of aid last year. What happened this year? Well, what happened this year is that your mother moved her house into your name. And you reported that. So that's why you have no financial aid. So they're not too happy about well as maybe the loss and basis step up on the house. And so, again, there's a heck of a lot to know when you're moving stuff around. And I always kind of chuckle, because people will come to me and say, well, I'm just coming to you to move this. Can't you just move it for me? And it's almost like, you know, you don't know what you don't know. But again, trying to educate and getting the word out there. And again, if you have the situation, just be mindful of it and bring it up to your attorney. If they're not asking it, bring it up to them. If they don't know how to deal with it, then come back and I'd be happy to talk to you about it. If you don't like working with bald guys, we'll find some guy who knows about the rules of financial aid who has hair. I mean, there's, again, you know, clients are funny, but again, it's very important to work with someone who you're comfortable with. Knows the rules of the game, or if they don't know, can tell you that they don't know, and that, you know, this is when the rules will be figured out. But I always like going through the EFC calculation, because people are like, finally, that's what I want to know. I don't want to know, you know, how many loans I can get in this. I want to know how it's calculated. And even people who have no interest or maybe never qualify for financial aid still have a curiosity about how it's calculated.
Mm-hmm.
And the unfortunate part is to get the reaction that you had, June, which is, that's just kind of weird. You know, it's almost like counterintuitive. So you're basically telling your kid not to work, not to save money. But again, it's not necessarily that. It's just about, again, if you know the rules, you can kind of maybe plan around it. Maybe you don't keep the name of the kid on the assets. And that's another good point, because we talked about how it's calculated. So now, again, we have the cost. So those numbers of those four figures, of those four calculations, add up to give us EFC. Now, I've talked a few different times about why you would maybe have two different calculations, because expected family contribution, when we're talking about assets, one of the things you should realize is, well, what's countable? You know, what is it? What assets are countable? What assets are not countable? Okay, so we'll get that question a lot. And the biggest difference in the institutional method of calculation for a school like, you know, Holy Cross versus, you know, a federal methodology school that just uses the FAFSA form is the equity in the home. Okay, when you are applying for if you're using the FAFSA form and you're going to a school that uses the what we call the federal methodology calculation on EFC, your EFC number will be lower than if you had an EFC calculated on the institutional methodologies, because the institutional methodology on the CSS profile, when you fill out that form, home equity is calculated.
Okay.
Okay, so if someone comes and says, well, you know, I heard that, you know, I can just, you know, pay off my mortgage with some of these assets and change countable assets into non-countable, because one of the things that are calculated, as we saw, is parents' assets. Well, how do we get those assets reduced? How can we get that expected family contribution number lower so my need is higher? Because remember the formula, we can't lose track of the formula, cost of attendance minus EFC equals need. So if we get the EFC number lower, the need number gets higher. And that's what people are trying to do. And we'll get more into that after our break.
Okay, well done. It's Brendan King in studio. Estate Preservation Law Offices out of Worcester. And June night, it is 3:29. We'll be back on your Wednesday in the Money Matters Radio Network.
Welcome to Progressive.com, the auto insurance utopia.
Hi, what does this policy include?
Well, our policies have lots of free things like 24/7 live support, concierge claim service, and immediate response claim service, and it could save you hundreds.
Is this a dream?
No, rarely do dreams result in actual savings, but we do get that a lot. You could save hundreds. Call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or go to progressive.com today.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio. Concierge claim center is not available in all states. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Money Matters, morning edition, weekdays, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Join me, Joe Mantecardi, and co-host Brendan King. The first and third Thursday of the month at 8 a.m., Estate Preservation Law Office is 508-751-5010, 508-751-5010.
I've already done my planning. I've put my kids on the accounts, and it's protected, and that's just simply not so. And you'd also mention the nursing home, and that's the biggest creditor we see. When you get to a certain age, it's a pretty good chance that you might be heading into the nursing home, so adding your children to your account with your name still on it is not doing any asset protection. It's only exposing it. Well, Homestead's a good thing to have on your primary residence, and maybe I should back up and just explain what that is. Homestead is a declaration you make on your primary residence that protects up to $500,000 of equity in the house. But the one creditor that it doesn't count for is the nursing home, and it won't do anything for that.
Money Matters, morning edition, Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., only on the Money Matters Radio Network affiliate, WESO AM 970.
Yellow Book presents Quick Make a Decision Now, where people are asked to make snap decisions in emergency-like situations. Today's contestant is Bob, a small business owner looking to promote his business.
Hello.
We placed him in a leaky boat in a tank with toxic chemicals.
Yeah, I'm sinking.
He has 10 seconds to answer the question. What's the best way to find customers for your business? A, put one of those annoying inflatable people thingies that shake their stupid arms in front of your business. Or B, advertise in Yellow Book.
This thing is really sinking.
Then you really should make a decision now, Bob.
Okay, Yellow Book. I'm going to choose Yellow Book, obviously. It's a Yellow Book commercial. Would you get me out of this thing?
Correct. Yellow Book can help you reach customers online, on their mobile, or in the book. YellowBook.com has ratings and reviews, video ads, and more. And WebReach, Yellow Book's search engine advertising program, places your ad across top search engines to drive visitors to your website. When your business needs help, the moment you need it, Yellow Book it. To advertise, call 1-800-YB-YELLOW or visit YellowBook.com today. Sound good, Bob?
Ah!
Stings, doesn't it? All right, somebody fish him out of there.
Welcome to Progressive.com, the auto insurance utopia.
Hi, what does this policy include?
Well, our policies have lots of free things like 24/7 live support, concierge claim service, and immediate response claim service, and it could save you hundreds.
Is this a dream?
No, rarely do dreams result in actual savings, but we do get that a lot.
You could save hundreds. Call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or go to progressive.com today.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and its affiliates Mayfield Village, Ohio. Concierge claim center is not available in all states. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm about to present to you a straightforward commercial for GEICO, the third largest personal auto insurer in the country. Last year, over 3 million drivers switched to GEICO, and GEICO received a customer satisfaction rate of 97%. Standard & Poor's has consistently awarded GEICO a AAA rating for financial strength. This is usually where I'd say something cute or clever, but like I said at the beginning, we're keeping this straightforward. Goodbye to you now.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you hundreds on car insurance.
Those other guys putting you to sleep? Your energy boost is right here on Boston's best source for financial news and information, the Money Matters Radio Network.
The sounds of money in the background. It is 3:33 on your Wednesday, and it's kind of muggy and warm out there, but that's not going to last. The temp's dropping back down in the next couple of days or so. June night, along with Brendan King of Estate Preservation Law Offices. We're talking about financial aid and need-based and calculations and, you know, how you can kind of move that money around legally, of course, to make yourself more eligible. Brendan, why don't you give out your contact info, too, so people can get in touch with you?
Sure. 71 Elm Street in Worcester, Mass. That's 71 Elm Street, Worcester, Massachusetts, 01609. Phone number is 508-751-5010, 508-751-5010. World Wide Web, www.estatepreservationlaw.com, www.estatepreservationlaw.com.
Now, let me ask you, too, you know, this is kind of, I don't know if it's a myth or misconception. People wonder, should I apply for financial aid? You know, my husband makes a pretty good salary. I have a pretty good job, make a pretty good salary. You know, my kid's going to college next year. But maybe we make too much money. Should we apply anyway?
You know, it's a good question. And a lot of times I'll have clients who come in and will just ask me that. And sometimes they don't want to do it because it's a pain. Sometimes they just want to know, is it worth the time? Is there anything I can do? Can we get more aid? Irrespective of any of that, I mean, I certainly can maybe give them some tips as to when to apply. Maybe not this year. Maybe next year might be worth it. You've got another student going. You make too much income now. Even if you moved your assets around, you know, your income is what it is. You're a W-2 employee, and that's enough to shoot to the EFC number to make you not qualified. So it depends on a lot of things. But I would say at the end of the day, a lot of times it makes sense for a lot of people, even if they don't are not looking at getting some what we call grant money, to look at it, because they may be interested in loans. And that in order to get loans, you've got to fill out the FAFSA form. So again, you know, it depends on what it is for everybody. But you bring up a good point, because part of that need, that last category, are those three things. And I should have said that in the beginning. So I'm glad you brought that up, June. Really, what need is, we talked about, you know, merit need versus financial need, and I was talking specifically on financial need. But the financial need in that category of cost of attendance minus EFC equals need is really broken out into three categories. You have the grants, the free stuff, which is what everyone wants, right? No, everyone wants the free stuff. Give me what I don't have to pay back. Then you have the loans. And then you have the work study. Okay. So those are really the three things. And possibly you could even break it down into two categories. You have the free stuff, and then you have what we call self-help. You know, you have the loans and the work study. It really could be categorized in those two categories. So, you know, with that, I think where we were before the break was, hey, you know, I've got, you know, this EFC number, okay? And we talked about how if you can get that number to be less, then the need and the formula from 3,000 feet up would be more, right? Because if you make a small number that you're taking away from, the number that you're left with is higher, which means the need's higher, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's math. So, you know, we've got a situation with, well, how do I make that number smaller? What are the things? Oh, just so, again, so I know. Well, what's important to know is asset-wise, what is counted in that, in the students' assets, what's counted mostly in the parents' assets, because for most of us who have kids going to school, kids don't have tons of dough in their name. We're looking really at the parents' assets. And what's important to understand is that difference we talked about. A lot of times the biggest asset people have is home equity. But again, on the federal methodology, FAFSA, not counted. on the institutional methodology approach, it's counted. So you what's really important is to know, because a lot of people will say, oh, I'm just going to pay off my mortgage and I'll take money out of my bank account, which is assessed, and put it into a non-assessed place. Well, that only makes sense if you're going to a school that doesn't assess it, because there may be some the schools that you may be applying to do look at that.
How do we find that out?
Well, again, it's very important to know that. It's very important to know, you know, what forms your college will be asking for. Mm. And you can find out by getting the CSS profile list of schools that request that extra form, that CSS profile form. And there is a list. If you go online, you can get the list. And if that school's on there, then you have to be aware of the fact that home equity is going to be looked at. Okay. Mm. So, you know, that's important to know. Now, the other thing that's also important to know is, you know, leaving the calculations aside for a minute, is to know a little bit about the history of the school and find out, you know, of the need. Just because we're talking about the formula here, that doesn't mean you're going to get it. Okay. You know, like anything else, we're talking about this in a bubble. So, for instance, two things. One, just because you have a number there that says this is how much need you're entitled to, does the school that you're applying to historically meet 100% of the need? Okay,
because every school is different.
Every school is different. Some schools have more dough than others. It's a simple fact. So some schools are able to pay and meet 100% of the need that you are is stated on your form. So if your need is $40,000, they cover $40,000. Now, the second question is, of the percentage that they do cover, what percentage of that is the free stuff, right? We were talking about wanting to get the free stuff. How much of that is the grants, and how much of it is loans and work study? Because we prefer to go to a place that has more, you know, grants.
Sure.
You know, and less self-help aid. Okay. I mean, hey, we all, you know, we're going to get some self-help aid. But, you know, to the extent we can get more grants, that's great. Now, I'm a perfect example. What I always tell my clients is don't be afraid to apply to some of these schools, because the theory is that, you know, with these financial aid formulas, if you can get in, you should be able to go. Oddly enough, although some of these profile schools that ask, you know, some of the harder questions include home equity, they actually have more money to pay for you to go to school. So what ends up happening is, I'm a perfect example. You know, it was going to cost me, I come from a big family, parents were civil servants. You know, it was going to cost me more to go to UMass than Holy Cross. Basically because the school that I went to covered 100% of the need, and a good, very high percentage of that need was grants. So, you know, looking at those two things together, it made more sense for me to go here. So what I would say is, you know, just because you can't afford to go doesn't mean necessarily you can't afford to go. Mm-hmm. You may very well be. So, again, at the end of the day, you have to look beyond, you know, what your the number is, beyond what you think you can afford, because the structure and the nature of the financial aid formula it suggests that you should be able to go if you can get in. You know,
right.
That's the theory behind it, and that's how it should be. Now, whether you can, you know, get in at first go around or qualify for any aid is another matter. But oftentimes people will say, well, Brendan, you know, okay, that's great. I know the formula. We got the school. What assets are going to be assessed? How do I make that number smaller? So if that my EFC number is smaller, you can get more aid. Well, it's important to know what assets are assessed, and sometimes it's confusing. Now, your retirement plans are not assessed.
Okay.
So when we're talking about those assets, you don't have to do that. We talked about the home equity on the FAFSA, or the federal methodology side, not assessed. Okay. Other things, annuities and cash value of life insurance policies, not assessed. So what you'll see a lot of times is people out there, you know, I don't sell life insurance, but a lot of times people will be looking at that as a place where they can possibly put some money on the life insurance side. Big new one that had come out a few years ago, which was nice to see, is that business assets, if you have less than 100 employees on the FAFSA form, business assets are not assessed. So you don't have to go through, I own a small business, I don't have to go through and start calculating my computers and all this stuff, because that's my stuff, it's a small business, I don't have to assess it now.
Great.
Not counted. So that's a nice thing that has come up. Oftentimes people will say, well, what if I... you know, take my real property and put it into a business asset? Well, see, there's some gray areas there, you know, and that's where some of the planning might be, you might be able to come in with some of that planning. But again, knowing what's assessed, what isn't assessed. Also, too, you know, what about step parents? You know, are their assets and their income going to be assessed? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's all kinds of questions that come in with that. And I've held off a few marriages by telling them, yeah, it's going to be. If you get married.
So we're talking, I hate bringing this one up to a lot of financial planners or whatever, but so could Whitney Houston have paid for Bobby Brown's kids to go to college when they were married? Right? I mean, it's kind of, it's something like that.
Something tells me they wouldn't have qualified for financial aid.
There you go. That's a good answer. But yeah, it's a good example anyway.
But it's perfect because, you know, people always say I'm very unromantic and, you know, I tend to be because I'm realistic.
You're a lawyer.
It's my job. It's my lawyer. But we'll talk about that step-parent issue when we come back.
All right. Great. Brendan King of the Estate Preservation Law Offices. It's 3:43. You're listening to the Money Matters Radio Network.
We both know it. We don't talk too much about it. Ain't no real big secret all the same somehow.
New artist Brooke White talking about radio.
I grew up listening to a lot of Carole King, and it's funny because whenever I hear I Feel the Earth Move Under My Feet on the radio, I still like crank it up and get excited. You know, I've heard it a million times. I could listen to the CD, but when it comes on the radio and it's like unexpected or spontaneous, which is kind of, I think, a cool part about the radio, you don't know what's coming next. And I always get excited when I hear that.
Radio, radio.
For new artist Brooke White, inspiration can strike at any time, and radio's the place where it all begins. Spontaneous, exciting, and always something new every day. Radio. To learn more, go to RadioHeardHere.com.
This is Brian McCormick from McCormick Law Firm in Boston. Did you know that without proper estate planning, you could lose more than half of the value of your estate to taxes? If you have questions or need help protecting your assets, you need someone who specializes in this area. For a free consultation, call 617-371-4351 or join me on the Money Matters Midday Show every Friday at 11 for advice you can count on. 617-371-4351.
Money Matters Morning Edition, weekdays 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Join me, Joe Mantricotti, and co-host Bill Murphy every Wednesday between 8 and 9 o'clock, Fairway Mortgage of New England, 508-407-8300.
Conventional rates are $417,000 in Worcester County. I mean, it changes by county, but your conventional rate, that means you're going to get the best rates out there. So, like I said, on a 30-year fix, you could be 4.75, 4.625, somewhere around there if you qualify, you have optimal credit. Now, on a jumbo, that's anything over that 417 mark. And the jumbo rates right now are around mid-fives, about 5.5. Last year at this time, they were high sixes. So, even though it wasn't happening with investments in jumbos last year, now it is. A lot of clients, I think, a better option, you know, take a five-year ARM. Five-year ARMs right now in the threes. Conventional.
Money Matters Morning Edition, Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., only on the Money Matters Radio Network affiliate, WESO, AM 970.
Total customer care. That's what makes Midas different. It's how we get to know you and your car, explain things in a way you'll understand, and give you service and repair options that respect your budget. From routine maintenance like oil changes, tires, and brakes, to advanced engine diagnostics and major system repair. Come to Midas and see the difference total customer care can make. People and prices you can trust. That's the Midas touch.
Log on to MoneyMattersBoston.com to find a Money Matters Radio Network affiliate near you.
It's the Money Matters Radio Network. It is 3:47. Streaming live on the web, MoneyMattersBoston.com. June night, along with Brendan King, Estate Preservation Law Offices out of Worcester, Massachusetts. Toll-free lines open, as always, 888 888- 205-2263. Before the break, Brendan, we're talking about step-parents and how they can affect this whole financial aid situation.
That's right. We break up a lot of engagements.
you got me thinking.
And it's true. You know, it's as sad as, you know, we do prenups. We do, obviously, a lot of things like that, asset protection. And divorce, obviously, is a big creditor on an estate. And you know, the two biggest we see are nursing homes and divorces. But as I was saying to you, Jim, before, on the break, you know, this has become, with schools getting so expensive, and the costs rising year after year, irrespective of people's incomes not rising year after year, but schools keep rising year after year, this knowledge has become more and more popular. You know, I actually learned the rules of this as a necessity for planning. In my opinion, I felt like I needed to know these rules so that I could help my clients move things around, from estate planning purposes or what have you.
Well, more people are going to nursing homes and more people are going to college.
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
There
so,
you go.
And it's funny because even very wealthy families will want to make gifts to grandkids or kids, but they tell me, say, listen, we need to do this, but you need to tell me a way that we can do this and not affect their aid, because if they can get any aid, I want them to get it. I don't mind picking up a difference on a tuition payment or, yeah, but we need to figure out a way to get this money to them so it doesn't affect the aid. Kind of like, and I was just saying, it's kind of like we were talking about last week with special needs planning. You know, there are benefits that come in from, in this case, the government, and we want to leave things for people without affecting those benefits. And the way we want to leave things for our kids and grandkids without affecting their ability to get more aid from the school.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you know, we've put a lot of marriages on hold with the knowledge that step parents' assets. And for those of you who think you can prenup around that, you can't.
Really?
Yeah, you can't prenup around that. You can't say that. Okay, well, let's make a contract. June, you and I are going to get married. I've got a boatload of kids. And you know what? We'll prenup so that you're not going to have to pay for my boatload of kids. Doesn't work.
It doesn't?
Doesn't work. Good thought, but doesn't work. So really what ends up happening
is... So let's just live together then. Let's just do that.
right. Let's live in sin. Let's just have everybody live in sin. But you know, but this stuff's important because as soon as they get married the next year, hey, Brendan, why didn't you tell me? No, I did tell you that.
Oh,
and this is what we're talking about.
Wow.
So now, oftentimes the flip side of that coin is, okay, well, if there's a divorce, then we're looking at, again, this is for FAFSA, and that's what I'm talking about right now. We're looking at who did the student live with most the last 12 months. So a lot of times you want to have them live with the poor parent. If there is a poor parent, obviously in a divorce, it's not supposed to happen, but to the extent it can happen,
mm-hmm.
that's where you'd want them to live.
Mm.
Marriage, foster parents are not included. Legal guardians, grandparents, not counted. Even the grandparent is kind of the guardian and not counted. Okay, so their assets are not counted. It's just the parents, step parents. That's important to know. Now, another thing that is important to know, and a lot of times people will ask me, is what happens if do I get audited? Like, because a lot of times I'll have someone who says, they'll fill up the FAFSA form and they'll say, I'm just going to fill it out the way I want. How are they ever going to know? Well, these things do get audited and it's called a verification process, and about 30% of them get verified.
Do they?
Yeah.
Oh,
and I've had clients who've come into me, late in the game who, and what the schools will do is they'll ask for your tax returns. Because everything flows on your tax returns. You know, everything will come back and will be revealed in your tax returns. So if you're saying you're making this much, what does your tax return say? If you say you have this many dependents or this many kids, what does your tax return say? Everything is kind of there. So if a school is asking for that, you're being what's known as being verified. And you, at that point, you just want to hope things match up. If they don't, then obviously you're putting yourself in jeopardy and losing aid. But that's an important thing to know. So these things are checked. It's kind of how, it's not one of those things that, you know, hey, I'm going to put whatever number down and you know, that's going to be the end of it.
Okay.
So,
let's just take a quick break.
Sure.
So much information, and it's great information. I'm learning a lot today.
Good.
It's 3:51, Brendan, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Let's do the Bloomberg Business Update.
This is the Bloomberg Real Estate Report. I'm Karen Moscow. A rush by U.S. homeowners to refinance at near record low interest rates marks a rare bright spot for the mortgage industry under attack for choking the economy with shoddy loans and botched foreclosures. Wells Fargo, the biggest U.S. mortgage lender, said it received $194 billion of loan applications in the third quarter, the second most in its history. About 80% were to refinance. Bank of America said lending margins are up and demand should remain robust through year-end. Lenders that survived the real estate crash are finding the pickup in refinancings overshadowed by a national foreclosure investigation and fresh investor efforts to force loan buybacks. They are also concerned that new consumer-friendly regulations will be burdensome. The Mortgage Bankers Association, meanwhile, says refinancing applications have more than doubled since the start of the year, hovering for the past 10 weeks near levels not seen since May 2009. That's the Bloomberg Real Estate Report. I'm Karen Moscow.
This is my parents' Mercedes M-Class. And one day, I'll drive my kids to school in it.
Don't look now, but someone else just may have their sights set on your certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz. And who could blame them? After all, every one of our certified pre-owned vehicles undergoes a rigorous inspection by factory-trained technicians to ensure it meets the uncompromising standards of Mercedes-Benz. And considering we invented the automobile, those standards are indeed high.
I might even drive them the long way to school.
Plus, every one comes with a warranty and roadside assistance for up to 5 years and 100,000 total miles. And now, with 3 months of Sirius satellite radio. Come in for exceptional financing on our certified pre-owned vehicles today. And remember, if it's not at your authorized Mercedes-Benz dealer, it's not certified pre-owned. Today could be the day you get not only the car you've wanted...
And no way am I letting my kids put their feet on the seats.
But the car they'll start wanting.
See dealer or call 1-800-FOR-MERCEDES for complete program, including certified pre-owned, limited warranty, and Sirius satellite radio details and limitations.
Boston's fastest growing financial news station, the Money Matters Radio Network. Visit us on the web at moneymattersboston.com.
You're listening to the Money Matters Radio Network. You found us, and it's 3:54 on your Wednesday. Moneymattersboston.com is the web, 888-205-2263, toll-free line. June 9, along with Brendan King. Brendan King, Estate Preservation Law Offices out of Worcester, Massachusetts. How do we get in touch with you again?
All right. It's 71 Elm Street, Suite 100, Worcester, Massachusetts, 01609, 508-751-5010. www.estatepreservationlaw.com, www.estatepreservationlaw.com. My personal email is bking@estatepreservationlaw.com.
Okay, Brendan, we've got about 4 or 5 minutes left of the show. What else do we need to know?
Okay, a few things. One of them is kind of funny. Because I always have people who think they're very creative, and of course a lot of people are very creative, but I have one guy who comes to me every year, and I think he forgets that he asks me every year that he really believes his student is an independent student. And what that means is, okay, my student's independent, and therefore none of my assets and my income is going to be counted. It's just going to be their deal. Okay, so that's the goal.
Does this person not live at home? Or?
Well, no, that's what's so funny about it. Nah. Because the definition of independent student says, well, my student's independent, pretty independent. I'm like, well, okay, where does she live? With me.
In the attic?
Yeah. I'm like, okay, how old is she? She's 18. Okay. Was she a veteran or, something? Nope. And we go through this thing. It's like, he's just describing every, college freshman that you've ever heard. And every year he asked me, from freshman to sophomore, and every year he would call me. And so, it's a good idea to try to, see if your student's independent, but obviously it's going to take a little bit more than being an 18-year-old attic dweller. Really what we're talking about, maybe, 24 years of age by the end of the year before you apply, if you were a veteran, if you were, ward of the court, you're married, there's got to be something else involved. So again, it's a little bit more than what you think independent means. Oh, they're independent because they can make their own peanut butter and jelly, not cutting the mustard there, okay? You need a little bit more than that. So that's one thing I thought we could end on. The other couple of things, just kind of a crossover. And because when we're talking about, saving for college, a lot of people will think of two things, UTMA accounts, Uniform Transfer to Minors Act accounts, and 529s. Okay, and I want to briefly talk about some of the differences between those two things, because quite often those are two vehicles that are used for savings. Now, 529 plans, they're assessed at parents' assets. Okay, so they're looked at as being a parent's asset. So if my parents have a 529 for me, It would be counted as my parents' assets. If I have a 529 for my kids, I'm the owner. I'm the owner. So that's good news in the sense of, remember, 5.65 versus 20% assessment on that asset. Okay, so again, getting back to some of the thinking, now you're probably thinking, well, so let me get this straight. I'm going to get penalized for saving, and it's kind of, yeah, you are in a way, but you're going to get penalized less in a 529 plan versus a UTMA account, Uniform Transfer Minors, because those are assessed at the kid's asset. Okay, because they really are the child's asset. The custodian is not the owner, as opposed to a 529 where the parent is the owner. There's no fiduciary duty in a 529, so a parent could certainly just pull that asset back without any consequence. The UTMA, there's a fiduciary duty there. The child is the owner. It's the parent there, if they're the custodian, is just a custodian on it and just to use that for the benefit of the student. So as things go, we oftentimes say, spend that first, your UTMA first, because that's killing you more for financial aid than the 529 plan.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Now, breaking further away from financial aid to cross over into more of an estate planning matter, we would want to say, well, how are 529s looked at if you are looking at the nursing home? Because you may have a grandmother who's holding it for the benefit of their grandchild.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're totally countable. That's a countable asset in terms of looking at being spent down for the nursing home. Because why? It's something that the elder could reach.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? As opposed to a UTMA account where there's a fiduciary duty there. That's really an asset of the child or the grandchild. So that would be protected. So you can kind of see how, again, going around the Rubik's Cube, looking at the financial aid aspects, how are they counted and assessed versus, hey, now we got to look at it if grandma goes in.
Big picture. Sure.
Now, the other thing you could do to protect the 529 is a trust can own 529 accounts. So what grandma could do is set up a trust and actually have the 529 plan held in a trust, which would then protect it from a cost of long-term care scenario. The downside to that would make it a situation where it probably wasn't counted at all as a 529 in grandma's name, but now it's going to be counted as possibly a child's asset by being in the trust.
Mm-hmm.
So again, these are all things that need to be counted, need to be looked at, but again, knowledge is power.
We like it. Thank you so much for the information. Brendan King, Estate Preservation Law Offices, every Wednesday from 3 to 4. Have a great week. We'll see you back here next week.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Wouldn't miss it.
You've been listening to the Money Matters Radio Network.
This is the Money Matters Radio Network. WBNW 1120 AM Concord, Boston. WPLM 1390 AM Plymouth. And WESO 970 AM Southbridge. It's Money Matters at 9 and Stu Taylor at 11. The Money Matters Radio Network.
I have aging parents, and I hear a lot about how one parent can lose almost all of their assets when the other parent unexpectedly enters a nursing home. Is this true, and should I really be concerned about it?
It absolutely is true, and yes, you should be concerned about it. I'm Todd Lutzke, a partner at the law firm of Cushing & Dolan, and your Wednesday morning co-host of Money Matters, and very little bothers me more than when I see how one spouse...